You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. In today's podcast, we talk about an 11-year-old who was chastised for sitting down during the Pledge of Allegiance and then all the issues associated with that. We start our two-part interview with Paul Herndon regarding raw milk, running a dairy, and even owning your own cow. And we're also adding a new segment to the Courageous Life podcast. It's called Matron and Maiden, and it is hosted by Monica and Lindy, and they talk about the lost arts of womanhood. In today's Worldview segment, we go to a school district in California where a middle schooler, 11 years old, was chastised for sitting down during the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, there's a few things to talk about here with regards to this. The article that I'm looking at here is from Pathos.com, and the owner of it is called The Friendly Atheist. And the 11-year-old also claims atheism as his belief system. And they actually use those terms, his atheist beliefs. And that's important to discuss here because when we talk about faith or belief, it's important to understand what the fundamental presuppositions are. So, for example, with Christianity, our fundamental presupposition is that God is and that he has revealed himself to us. And so, therefore, our faith would be belief in the truth claims of the scriptures. Okay, and then that gets into a whole nother subject on what does that mean and all that. But I want to stick with that for right now. And likewise, for this situation here where the child believes in atheism, which I would say he has faith in atheism, and he's believing in the truth claims of man, or the fact that there is no God, to be more specific with atheism. And so in this case, they believe that it was a violation of his First Amendment rights, unconstitutional, etc., etc. There's a couple things here. I want to give you my takeaways because to be perfectly honest with you, I don't care that he sat down during the Pledge of Allegiance. I really don't. In fact, I think that's well within his right to sit down during the Pledge of Allegiance. And so my takeaways are this. Number one, although I agree with his First Amendment right there, I find it highly ironic that we will go to bat for him on his First Amendment rights, or I should say these types of organizations, the humanist organizations, etc., will do his bidding, and at the same time, they will chastise the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker if they find something that goes against their conscience and therefore do not want to support it. For example, the cake maker with regards to same-sex marriage, etc. And so, you know, we must be weary of these types of things and watch them. Watch the underlying worldview behind this. Okay, if you look at a lot of the comments on these articles with him, everybody is just celebrating this 11-year-old as such a free-thinking young child, etc. But the reality is he has not developed his atheism on his own. He is probably has taught this from his parents at home. And you know, that's fine. Everybody has an ideology. Everybody has an agenda. And if we're honest, we will say that. And everybody has an underlying worldview. And so it's important to understand that. My other takeaway from this is a warning to Christians, and specifically to Christian parents. Don't be lulled into a false sense of security. So for example, this school that says the Pledge of Allegiance, and a lot of times that Christians will cling to that and say, oh, this school says the Pledge of Allegiance, therefore, you know, all is well in the world. But in reality, the underlying worldview has nothing to do with whether or not they recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Today I'm talking to dairyman Paul Herndon of Pleasant Meadow Creamery. He hails from Richmond, Virginia, and he was raised in Northern California outside of Sacramento. He is married to Deborah, and they moved to Northern Idaho in 2004. They purchased a 20-acre forested property in Sagal, Idaho. Paul then built a barn on the property, and they moved the family into it. Over the course of several years, he built a custom timber frame home and was fortunate to add another 20 acres to the farm as well. The Herndons purchased their first Guernsey cow in 2011 as a family milk cow. Because the cow was such a good producer, they began selling raw milk to others and then added a second cow. Now they have a couple more heifers up and coming and plan to add more cows in the next several years. The goal is to become a Grade A raw milk dairy by 2016, with up to 12 producing cows, selling to markets between Sandpoint and Coeur d'Alene. Pleasant Meadow Creamery is an Idaho all-Guernsey dairy committed to providing you with wholesome, 100% grass-fed, non-GMO-based raw Guernsey cow milk as God intended milk to be. The cows at Pleasant Meadow Creamery live their lives on irrigated pasture for 6 months of the year and in a straw-bedded barn and grass turnout yard during the days when it is too wet, icy, or snowy. When the girls aren't eating fresh grass and clover, they are eating hay produced on the farm without chemical fertilizers, herbicides, or pesticides. They use chickens for fertilization and sheep to help maintain a healthy balance between grass and broadleaf plants. Paul, thanks for being here with us. We really appreciate your time. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became to run a dairy?
Okay, so when we first bought our property, it was mostly forested, and we always knew that we wanted to have dairy animals. And so the first things we got were goats.
Okay.
And in fact, they were Nubian goats. And I kind of smile when I say that because I really don't like goats, having had the experience. But that's not to say they're bad. It just didn't suit my personality.
Okay.
So we started with Nubian goats. And the reason we got goats is because they're what would they be called? Browsers. Okay. Foragers would be grass eaters. Browsers eat bushes. And got so it. The one thing goats do is they can go through a forest. And even certain times of year, they'll actually trim all the branches off trees. Okay. If they find any dug fir saplings, they actually strip all the bark off and end up killing the trees.
Okay,
very interesting creatures. I think they get some sort of nutrient out of it. If I recall, it was in the spring. But what ended up happening was, first of all, goats are great. And we ended up transitioning to Saanen goats because the quality of the milk is more like cow milk. It's Saanens are considered the Holstein of the goat world, as far as the taste and the production volume, etc. But what ended up happening was we acquired more land adjacent to our current property, which gave us a big open field. And so as soon as you're staring at a big open field, you're thinking, I got to put something on it.
Right.
Because that's the only thing that keeps fields healthy is you have to graze them.
Yeah.
If you just do nothing with them, they actually don't do very well. I think it goes back to what the Bible teaches, which is man is to go out and subdue the earth. And part of subduing the earth is exercising proper care and management.
Yeah.
Unlike what the world teaches, the earth doesn't just take care of itself. It actually requires human stewardship. God made us partners in the creation. So I'm looking at this field, looking at saplings growing up in it, looking at nothing but noxious
weeds.
It's
trying to be a forest.
It's trying to be a forest. Okay. It's trying to return to what it was. And it had bad use in the past, misuse. And so a lot of noxious weeds have come in. So you're thinking, okay, I need to get rid of the saplings. I need to get something on it that can really graze it. And the good animal for that is cows. And I'm looking at a goat. A Saanen goat in their best days can produce a gallon and a quarter a day.
Okay.
A gallon and a quarter. Okay, so it's kind of a toy dairy animal in a way. And that's no offense to people who own goats, because they are great animals and very appropriate for certain situations.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at it thinking, I'd love to have more milk out of a single animal rather than having to own multiple animals. Then whenever we had surplus, we couldn't sell it to anybody because people in the United States have sorted this issue with goat milk.
I'm going to die? Well, am I going to die if I drink raw goat milk?
Well, that's it. I mean, They just have this, like, nah, I don't really. They'll say it has a goaty flavor, oh, okay. even though Sonnens don't. In fact, Sonnen goat milk, if it's handled well, is you can't distinguish the difference between cow milk and Sonnen goat milk. Although over time, it will develop a certain flavor that you know it came from goats. And if okay. if you were to set two glasses of milk that are several days old in front of me, and one's goat and one's cow, I'd be able to tell you which one the goat milk is. Okay. Also, goat milk is naturally homogenized, mm-hmm. and so the cream doesn't just rise to the top, so you would need a cream separator to make butter or other products out of it.
And we like that part.
Exactly. So I started thinking, okay, so I've got this field that needs grazers. I would love to have more milk, and if I have excess milk, I'd like to sell it to other people, but no one seems to be interested in the goat milk. So we ditched the goats,
okay.
and we got our first cow, and the very first cow we got was a Guernsey,
okay.
because we did a lot of research, chose the Guernsey as our breed of choice, and then...
Why Guernsey?
Guernseys are... Okay, there's islands off of the coast of France. They're called the Channel Islands.
Okay.
They actually belong to the UK, and there are three islands, Jersey, Guernsey, and Ayrshire.
Wow.
Okay. I think that's right, yeah. And so on one island, they've developed the Jersey dairy cow, on the other island, the Guernsey, and on the other one, the Ayrshire. All of those cows have some similar features, except that they're all different size, and the components of the milk are slightly different for each of them. So taking those three, the two that are most similar are actually the Jerseys and the Guernseys as far as milk quality. So that would be cream content or fat content,
okay.
protein content, sugar content, and even the off-white color that both of those milks have. However, those are two very different cows. A Jersey cow tends to be about 800 pounds.
Okay.
A Guernsey cow tends to be about 1,100 pounds. And we're only talking averages here.
Right.
A Jersey cow, a good one, will produce maybe an average. And we, in the dairy industry, we talk pounds per day, not gallons. But I'll
okay.
go ahead and put it into gallons for you. A good Jersey, throughout their entire lactation curve, on average, will produce about 3.5 gallons a day if she's being pushed on her production.
Okay.
A good Guernsey will produce 4 to 5 gallons
okay,
a day.
Wow.
Now, if we push her on her production, she'll actually be 5 to 6 on average throughout the entire lactation. So Guernseys produce quite a bit more milk. But then the most important factor for us was we were doing research related to A2 milk and A1 milk, which is a with a beta-casein typed. I think that's the, I'm not a geneticist, but it's either the phenotype or the genotype, and I forget the difference in those terms. But essentially, they've taken the beta casein and typed it as A2 or A1. Most mammals produce A2 exclusively. Like human milk is A2, goat milk is A2.
Okay.
Most other animals that produce milk are producing, whales are producing all A2.
Okay.
Something happened as man was working with cows to push their production to higher levels that there was a genetic mutation that occurred. And it mostly occurred in the Holstein Friesian breed.
And isn't that the predominant milker in America?
Absolutely. So we'll get to that. So the Holstein Friesian is the one almost exclusively produces A1. Although, by the way, the Holstein industry has figured out that people are actually starting to care about whether their milk is A1 or A2. And so now, if you go to a sire organization where you can buy bull semen, for example, Select Sires, you can actually get A2 Holstein bulls.
Really? Okay.
Yes, and they're guaranteed A2. They've typed them. They've figured out that's what they are, and they're selling them because if you take an A2 bull and breed it with an A1 cow, you're going to get an A2 result.
Okay.
And eventually you're going to move that breed more toward A2 again.
Gotcha. So I'm assuming that the A2 is the better health property.
So exactly. The A2 is the better health properties. And I don't have all the details on that because,
sure.
you know, you really have to go read the research, and the research isn't entirely conclusive either, but you can look it up online. You can Google A2 milk. And you'll actually find there's a company. I don't remember the exact name. It's A2 Inc. or okay. something like that. It's in New Zealand. And New Zealand, by the way, only allows A2 cows in New okay. Zealand wow. because they have figured out that, you know, that's an important genetic mutation that occurred that's actually not good for human health.
Okay.
It makes the milk have certain properties that are not good for human. And some people have trouble actually drinking that milk.
Okay. Is that where we're getting a lot of this lactose intolerance?
Well, that's what people will say. Oh, it must be lactose intolerant because every time I drink milk, it gives me troubles.
Right.
So it must be lactose intolerance. But, you know, lactose intolerance can be something different entirely. For example, there are certain people groups in the world, and they actually tend to be closer to the equator, where they didn't grow up with dairy cows. In other words, not just this generation, but generations past.
Sure.
And they actually don't do well on cow milk in general.
Okay.
Until you actually give them good cow milk. And and sometimes those people who say, no, genetically I'm lactose intolerant, suddenly can drink it.
Right.
If it's grass-fed cows, if it's A2 Guernsey, for example. So back to how we chose Guernsey, that was one of the factors besides the size of the cow, the production volume of the cow. One of the factors was the fact that Guernseys are the top breed for getting almost all A2, A2.
Gotcha.
Without even testing your cows, you know that cow is producing over 90% A2.
Okay, milk. Gotcha. Now, how many cows do you guys have right now?
So currently we have 2 production cows,
okay.
2 young heifers,
okay.
and we've had 5 bull calves in a row, okay. which is the bane of the dairyman. I keep waiting for my own heifers, but
what is your goal? What is the end?
Number of cows,
yes.
Let me tell you how I got into this. Having gotten that first Guernsey right away, we got a really good producer. Although she had been a commercial dairy cull cow, but she okay. was still fairly young, and she was producing so much milk. And of course, we naturally immediately offered it for sale to our friends, and they immediately wanted it. And it kind of took off from there, where then eventually I said, oh, I want to get a second cow.
Okay.
And then, and I believe that the Lord gives you desires and passions, and I just love cows.
Okay.
I love milking cows. Some people say, it's a curse waking up and having to milk the cow in the morning and then having to milk the cow at night and having to make your whole schedule around milking cows and you can't go on vacation because you don't milk the cows. What's funny is that when you talk to people who are passionate about the dairy industry and about cows in particular,
yeah.
when dairymen go on vacation, they go to other dairies. They go visit other dairies. They just, you can find all sorts of videos online where you'll hear dairymen interviewed and they'll say something like, even when I go on vacation, there always seems to be a cow in it somewhere.
Okay.
So I have this passion for cows, and therefore the plan is to grow the dairy to become a grade A dairy. Currently we're a raw milk dairy, okay. and we do sell our milk off the farm and through a natural food store here locally.
Okay.
And then the plan is to distribute more regionally and grow to about 12 cows.
Okay.
And maybe up to 20. I can okay. definitely support 12 off of the land I have right now.
Okay.
No problem. I okay. might even be able to support 20.
Now, what are the in the state of Idaho, what are the, I guess, the categories of being able to sell milk?
Okay, so when you're selling milk at all to anybody other than to your own family, legally, if you're doing that, you have to notify the state that you're doing it.
Okay.
And so, and it's an easy form that you fill out that literally has, I think, 3 questions or 4. Name of the producer, address, contact number or email, something okay. like that. Just notifying the state saying, hey, I'm retailing raw milk. And so we have a law in the state of Idaho that it's called the small herd exemption.
Small herd exemption, okay.
And if you have 3 cows or less.
Okay. Production cows, right?
Production okay. cows. 3 production cows, exactly. Thanks for clarifying. So 3 production cows or less, then you qualify under the small herd exemption, which means that the state is going to test your product monthly. So what happens now is they send a dairy inspector to our dairy every month.
Okay.
We get the call on Friday. He says, hey, Paul, I'm going to be there Monday.
Okay.
He takes a sample of the milk. He goes to a 5-county area. The guy who covers North Idaho drives literally over a 5-county area, goes to all the dairies, grade A or not.
Okay.
If they're doing raw milk, and there are a lot of raw milk dairies in the 5-county area, takes all those samples, keeps them on ice, puts them on FedEx, ships them to Boise next day. So he collects Monday and Tuesday, and then it gets to the state dairy lab on Wednesday, and then it gets tested for 4 things. It's tested for somatic cell count, for total bacteria count, for coliform bacteria, and for presence of drugs. Mm-hmm. And then you get the results by the beginning of the next week. You can fail one of those 4 categories. Mm-hmm. And each category is judged separately. So there are thresholds that you have to stay under. No drugs at all. But on the somatic cell count, on the total bacteria, and on the coliform bacteria, you have to stay below a certain number. And if you go above the number, that's okay. The way the law reads is that you have to, if you fail 3 of the last 5 tests, you're shut down. I'll tell you, all right, you can't retail that milk until the next testing cycle and you pass so that you get out of that 3 out of 5. And each of those categories is judged independently. So if I have a failure in somatic cell count, and then the next month I have a failure in somatic cell count, and then the next month I have a failure in bacteria, well, that's not a 3 out of 5.
Separate categories.
It's separate. Okay. So you're only looking at, did he fail 3 out of 5 of the somatic cell count?
Gotcha.
So it's kind of complicated in that way. It's actually a great standard. The one thing that I learned from it was, so bottom line, they don't look at your facility. They're only looking at the product itself. It's product oriented.
Gotcha.
Is this guy putting out a safe product or not? And if he is, we don't really care how he's doing.
Small herd exemption. Hey, we understand that you're not going to have all this equipment.
Exactly. Okay. Because it's a big investment to step up to a grade A dairy.
Gotcha.
But once you go past 3 cows, you've got to go grade A.
Okay.
And this state is actually an excellent state to be in. Because this state, when you work with the Dairy Bureau, which, by the way, it's kind of funny because the head of the Dairy Bureau is also the head of CAFO, which is Confined Animal Feed Operations. Yeah. So it's the one thing I really would never do, a CAFO. Right. Yeah, Marv, I can't remember his last name, but his first name is Marv. He's in charge of both the Dairy Bureau and the CAFO operation because most of the big dairies in the state of Idaho are CAFOs.
Okay.
And they're down in the southern part of the state. In fact, Idaho is the fifth or sixth largest dairy producer in the United States.
Wow.
We're a massive dairy state.
It's pretty incredible considering the population.
It is. Yeah. It is. But of course, a lot of our milk goes out of state.
Right.
So Marv and the rest of the people in his bureau actually seem pro-business and pro-dairy.
Okay.
And initially, I've been told by an employee of the Dairy Bureau that, by the way, the small herd exemption has only been around for, I think, since 2009.
Okay.
So it's not been very long. It's very recent. But in Idaho, hey, if you tell people, no, you can't do that, they actually end up doing it anyway.
Right.
And so the state, and Marv was against, you know, allowing raw milk sales, retail sales, giving a legal avenue. But once the state legislature said, no, we're going to go ahead and approve it and just regulate it, then the great thing about the Dairy Bureau from Marv on down is they put away their personal opinion on it and they say, okay, we're behind it and we'll make it happen.
Okay.
And so then the Dairy Bureau had to pick what those threshold numbers are for raw milk. They actually happen to be half of what the commercial pasteurized milk has to meet.
Oh, really?
So, for example,
it's a higher standard.
A much higher standard. Your raw milk has to be much cleaner than what's coming out of the commercial dairies.
So, you know, that actually brings up a great point. If I could backtrack just a little bit, why raw milk versus pasteurized milk?
Okay. to top the list, flavor. But that's not the real reason.
Yeah.
Raw milk is the best milk on the planet. One of my favorite things about being a dairyman is when I milk the cows, every time I milk, I have a mug of room temperature milk.
Really?
So I pour myself a mug, let it cool to room temperature, and then drink it. It's the best stuff on the planet. It's sweet. It's just a very good flavor. I travel sometimes, and when I travel, I try to find good local milk. And some of the places I've been traveling lately are Western Washington and Oregon, and there are some good dairies over there.
Okay.
But in Oregon, you can't retail sale raw milk. So if I go to the store there, I get Jersey milk, which I do not prefer, but I'll take it. Because good Jersey milk will taste the same as Guernsey.
Okay.
So I'll get it. It'll come in a glass jar. So there should be nothing ruining the flavor whatsoever.
Okay.
And then I'll take my first sip of them and I'm like, there's something wrong with that milk. And there's just something off about it. And it's the pasteurization. And you go to their websites and they'll say, well, we vat pasteurize. And vat pasteurization means they're not taking it to a high temperature. They're heating it up to, I don't know exactly what temperature, I can't recall. Usually I think it's around 150 to 170, and they hold it there for a certain number of minutes, and then bring it back down, and they say that's the best compromise we can get as close to raw. And if I were in Oregon, that's what I would be doing.
Sure.
I mean, I would still do dairy. If the state wasn't going to let me do raw milk, then I would go ahead and do vat pasteurization. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I don't think those people have a choice.
Right.
Although, frankly, then there's some dairies. Washington State allows retail raw milk sales.
Okay.
But there's some dairies over there that say, no, I would never do raw milk because I think it's dangerous.
Right.
Or, you know, the FDA will tell you it's dangerous.
I think your average American probably has this conception that it's dangerous.
And there was a reason that perception exists, and we could go into that. I actually have studied this, so I know how that came about. Because it did used to be dangerous under certain conditions. And I'm talking historically, way back, not even in the current CAFO situation, which is confined animal feedlots, which it would be dangerous in that situation too. But, okay, so first, the reason we do raw milk is flavor, but the main reason is because you preserve all the components of the milk as God intended them to be. And now you have your certain crowd in the United States or in the world who say, hey, cow milk is for calves, not people. That's not true. God made cows for people, and he made cow milk for people. Period. Okay. I mean, God made all animals to serve us, to glorify him. They're not for themselves. They're for us. And so if you're going to take milk and have it have all of its enzymes undamaged by heat, have all of its proteins undamaged by heat, etc., it's going to be raw milk. Right. So pasteurization is part of what defines milk as raw. The other part that defines it as raw is homogenization. So see those dairies in Oregon that I like, they're vat pasteurizing, but they're not homogenizing. Mm-hmm. So homogenization means you're taking the cream and you're causing it to blend throughout the milk and make it look like goat milk, and it doesn't rise to the surface again.
Okay.
Right. So if I look at a jar of raw milk, I'm going to see a cream line at the top.
And when we get your milk, because we're one of your customers, we love it. That's one of our favorite parts.
That's right. Of course. And then you can go in there and skim that cream off and make butter and everything else, right?
We do.
And so with homogenized milk, obviously you can't do that. By the way, you can't make, back to pasteurization and homogenization, you can't make very good cheese with it. You can't hardly make anything with it. It won't do anything.
Right.
The kefir doesn't work. It's dead. It's a dead product. So those good dairies, at least they're not homogenizing. But the way they actually homogenize milk is that's a mechanical process where they take it under pressure and they force it through metal screens. And they actually change the shape of the fat globules in the milk, which lends to atherosclerosis in the human body, because they actually take it from a rounded shape and it becomes more of a sickle shape.
Wow.
And it sticks. Sticks.
Isn't it interesting that in the United States we have one of the highest levels of osteoporosis and everything else, yet we drink so much quote-unquote milk? You know, just that connection there is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to pick up the rest of this interview in tomorrow's podcast.
Journey with us
as we rediscover
the lost arts of womanhood. Today's podcast, we're going to basically be talking about the podcast. What is it about?
Well, it's about cooking from scratch, simple craft projects, things like wildcrafting, and a lot more things like canning, candle making, and soap making.
So basically, all the stuff that we want to learn how to do, we're going to share with that other people.
Yes.
Okay. So this is also going to include how to manage a home and even educating our children and raising children and chores.
Yes.
All those types of things. Some of those things are things that I've done for years and that Lindy is actually learning how to manage a home and how to cook and things.
Yes.
And some of them are things that honestly we've never done, yeah. But now we're living on a homestead.
Yeah. It's a lot different here. Yeah. It is right in the middle of a city where you can walk a couple of miles to a store if your car is in the shop.
Yeah. Right. Or you can walk to the car. Exactly. And pick it up. Whereas now here, we're living on the side of a mountain in the middle of the country.
Where if you tried to walk anywhere, you would probably be stranded.
Yeah.
For a very long time.
It would be a long walk to town.
So long. Like 30 miles?
Yeah, it's about 30 miles. Okay. So we're going to be learning basically how to be more self-sufficient, how to make more products for ourselves, because our goal in the next, well, hopefully the next year or so, is going to be to stop going to the grocery store, stop purchasing things, and live off of what we can either make or grow ourselves.
Yep.
That's going to be challenging.
It's crazy.
It is crazy, but you know, it pushes you to learn new skills.
Exactly.
Like making butter.
Yeah. It's a lot of pressure knowing that it's all resting on you.
So we're using this time and this podcast to not only push us forward a little bit, but also to share with other people what we're learning so that maybe they can learn from some of our mistakes.
Exactly.
Oh, like you making a Oregon...
Oregon grape...
jelly.
Jam or jelly? I don't even know. The recipe said jam, but it made it in such a way as jelly. I actually made a video of it. Probably, I mean, if people ask for it, maybe.
How did it end up?
I made like a hard candy.
Right.
Boiled
it too long. Yeah.
And so now I don't even know what we're going to do with that jar because that thing isn't coming out.
Well, yeah, I think we have to throw the jar away. Or maybe we can put like a tea light in it and use it to, like put on our doorstep.
Oh yeah.
To make a little bit of light in the front where our lights are out right now.
Oh yeah. Make a pretty color too because it's like it's purplish red, but it's so hard even if it's not refrigerated, it's still way hard. It bends a spoon. Like when I stuck it in to try to get some, it bent the spoon.
Yeah. That was pretty funny. But see, again, that's one of those experiences where you go, "Huh, maybe a thermometer." Knowing exactly when you hit the right temperature and knowing when to take it off would be really helpful during that time.
Yeah, they said, because I've never even watched anybody make jam. I mean,
right.
It's a delicate process, really, because they said until it sheets. And I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So I looked it up and they're like, until it slowly runs off the spoon. And it took a long time for it to do that. Once I took it off, it was way too hard. So,
yeah, that's it's a learning curve. So, I mean, everything that we do, we'll be able to share it with other people, and hopefully they don't make the same mistakes we do. And now we have a thermometer because I'm using that to make other stuff, like yogurt and things like that.
Yep.
Which is something we'll be talking about tomorrow, yogurt making and then our pressure cooker that we've been actually using a lot this last few days.
Yeah.
That we just got.
It's really awesome.
Yeah.
Cooks really fast.
So basically that's our overview of our show and what our segment of this podcast is going to be. And what we really would appreciate any questions that people have, or maybe you're curious about learning to do something, but you don't either have the supplies or space or whatever. I know when we lived in Okinawa, there was a lot of things I wanted to learn. But our kitchen was small, our space was really limited, and I really couldn't do a lot of those things. So maybe you're wanting to have us experiment with something, and that would be great. So write us on the Facebook page, the Courageous Life podcast, right?
Yes.
Okay. And just write on there, you know, address it to Matron and Maiden and tell us what questions you have or what subjects you'd like us to cover. We're really open and flexible because we have a lot of things that we want to learn.
Yep.
All right. So I guess that's it for today. And we will be back tomorrow to talk about some of the things that we're learning around here.
Since we are approaching Reformation Day, I'm going to read a quote by Luther. And this is one of his replies at the Diet of Worms. Quote, "Since then, your majesty and your lordships desire a simple reply, I will answer without horns and without teeth. Unless I am convicted by scripture and plain reason, I do not accept the authority of peoples and councils, for they have contradicted each other. My conscience is captive to the word of God. I cannot and I will not recant anything, for to go against conscience is neither right nor safe. God help me. Amen." Unquote. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.